Are you ready for this, TK?
I don't know what I'm ready for. Well, I don't know what this is.
Story for you.
Okay.
Airbnb sucks. Bro, like on such a level, I can't even begin to describe to you.
Sharing people's houses with them and them just cleaning the sheets in between every single person.
They don't even do that. No, this. Okay. So we rented a villa with hot tub. Okay.
This already sounds disappointing. The description, villa, the word villa. Like, this isn't Italy or Mexico.
Well, it's not Italy.
It's Innisfil.
If you look at the pictures, you'd think it's got like villa-ish vibes.
Oh, boy.
But I mean, the plan wasn't really to have a villa. The plan was to go somewhere close enough to home while they're doing our floors again, right? And kind of have like a little bit of a quiet getaway. And so we get to this place and we're like, why is it on the corner of a busy main intersection, like a light, like traffic light intersection? And why are there no fences? How is this pet friendly? And oh, what the hell is that smell when you walk in the house? And are there people living in the basement right now? And like a list of things, like you look up at the
fan. Why didn't you read the reviews?
The reviews were great, but upon
no
digging
way that
deeper,
all that stuff was not in the reviews. Come on.
That's what I would think, right? That's what I said. I went back and I read the reviews. I'm like, how could nobody have said that it's like on the corner of a busy main street? Like, this is crazy. And so you go, and so it was villa with hot tub, don't forget. And the hot tub was a big selling feature, right? Because it looked like, like there's like a lake in the backyard and you're on the water. And
I've seen them take those fit pictures next to the puddle.
Okay. Can you just make sure you don't get the traffic light in the shot, please? Okay. So anyway, so we get there and we walk in and we're just like, no, like we're not staying here. This is ridiculous. Okay. This is not fair. What the fuck? And my wife's like, no, but we spent a lot of money on it. Like, you're not going to get your money back. And I was like, the fuck?
Watch
I'm not
me.
Getting my money back. You watch, you watch. Anyways. So you send a complaint in. And
Airbnb is pretty good like that.
It was good, though. Like, this lady called
They're
me.
They're on top
like,
of things.
Oh, my. No, not Airbnb. The host, the lady who, I guess, owns the house was like, oh, my God. Like, we've never heard this before. And we've rented this place so many times. I don't understand. Nobody's ever had an issue with any of this stuff before. And I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah. Like, villa?
Villa?
Villa? You can't use the word villa.
You can't use the word villa.
This is not a villa.
TK, it's time to subscribe to the real number one real estate podcast in Canada right now.
All right. Well, where do I find that show? Because this ain't it.
Nah, I don't know. You're going to have to figure it out. But in the meantime, press that button down there, please. Press a like thing and comment something to somebody somewhere below.
Guys, like, comment, and subscribe. Check out the Real Estate Clips channel. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, who you want to see on the show. We may not listen, but I guarantee you that we'll reply to the comment because we reply to every comment. And we love you guys.
We love you guys. And check out Instagram. It's on fire. But can I tell you, like, that is the exact conversation. You can't use villa and not show, like, that there's a traffic light right there. And how am I supposed to use this goddamn hot tub that I'm paying for? Everybody's going to be watching me that's at the light, right? I'm going to be sitting there in this hot tub while everybody's like honking at us, right? Honking at my wife and her bikini.
Oh, man. So what was the solution? What was the solution?
The solution?
We're in a housing crisis here, Darryl. There's people living on the streets and you're complaining about the hot tub and how people are going to see you. I mean, these are some first world
you
problems.
You had to do
right
that,
now.
Eh? That's,
come on.
That's true. I mean,
I want to hear. I want to hear the solution, though, because... Listen, I'm not saying I would not have left, you know? I may have left.
I didn't want to leave, TK. Like, that causes all kinds of other issues, right?
So what happened?
All kinds of other issues.
Did you leave?
Fucking right we left. And we went back home and we lived in the dust storm for another night while we waited for our new in his Airbnb. Villa.
Not a villa.
Well, this one you might have been able to get away with villa-ish.
Did it cost more money? And did Airbnb give you credit?
More money, no hot tub. And other than, I mean, it's pretty good, this place. But when you walk in, like my wife did tell me, while you're out on your way, do you mind getting some Glade plugins and some scented candles at Canadian Tire? So
it's not a good sign.
Like, well, it's fine. Okay, it's fine. But like, I'm never, ever, ever using an Airbnb again. It's a scam. It's a big, juicy scam.
Let's get on to our show here, which I'll share an Airbnb story. So I got a client who's, you know, in need of renting out his space. He's in need. He's got to pay his bills, you know. He's got to support his family. He's got stuff, you know. And so he said, well, why don't I just rent out a part of my house with Airbnb? Why don't I just go and apply for the license? It's my principal residence. I'll do it less than 180 days. It's going to follow all the rules that Toronto has set. I'm just going to do it, you know.
I'm going to make money every month.
It's going to at least keep my head above water. So this will at least give me an opportunity to be able to provide for my family. And so, you know, he made the application. Instead of selling his home at a price that, you know, he wasn't happy with, he made the application. And 6 months later, Daryl, he finally got accepted.
6 months to get accepted?
6 months later, you know.
What? Why?
That's
what
incredible.
What are they doing for 6 months?
Like, I don't know what they're doing, but I know
I guess
to get that
if everyone
license,
has villas, then
to try to be able to get onto the Airbnb registry in Toronto, this license, you got to wait 6 months. Again, another failed bureaucracy in the Toronto, you know, council department here. You know, they don't have any sense of urgency for basically anything. What would you need to do in order to get that license as far as the city goes? Verify it's their principal residence, verify that they own the home, you know, verify that, you know, they followed all the other rules. I'm sure there's a checklist that you submit, and that when you, you know, have all your documentation in a row, they just go, hey, Mr. Homeowner, here's your license number. Go give it to Airbnb and post it on their site. Like, Airbnb is supposed to be a simple process that somebody could take advantage of technology and have their home listed, you know, quickly, efficiently, in order to be able to generate income from unused spaces. And yet it's become an issue. Now, I agree that the ghost hotels were a bigger issue. I agree. When you got people who are just renting out condos left, right, and center, and the whole building's full of a bunch of Airbnb people, and that the hotels aren't being used anymore, and we're filling them with homeless people, we got a problem. We got to fix that.
There's a problem.
But to have somebody be able to rent out their own space, I mean, come on, guys. Like, let's get the show on the road here.
But I think originally what the hell it was for was to rent it when you weren't at it, to generate a little bit of income when you were away, not to rent out a room to some like poor schlub, and not to like do it as a hotel or a business. It got abused and it got like flipped on its head, and it's bad. I'm telling you. And I mean, I'm sure people have good experiences, but I'll bet you most of them are just garbage. And it is a result of policy and, I guess, interest rates allowed all these idiots to buy houses and condos to do this with.
Yeah, I've gone back to hotels on all my last few trips. I think the Airbnb for traveling is good in a big group if you want to save money. That's basically what it is. So far, my experience hasn't been, you know, where I'm, you know, maybe I'm not renting the right places. Maybe I'm not getting the villas, you know what I mean? And I'm just getting the two bedroom condo
though,
or the, you know, the little dumpy house on the corner with no fences that everyone can see you in the hot tub. But those type of situations, when I got them, I was always just kind of like, yeah, this is okay. And like, did I save some money? Maybe, but really I might as well have just been in a hotel. It would have been a lot easier. So now I've been focusing on mostly just getting hotels.
I've never not stayed in a hotel or some form of resort. This is not really a vacation, but like people do this kind of thing as vacations, and this would suck. I mean, you got to cook your own food all the time. That is not a vacation. Yeah. Airbnb is not really for a good vacation. It's just to get a cheap place, but you get a cheap place. This is the problem. Yeah. Anyways,
I got some more stuff.
One good thing I see around here is that most of the people in this area are living in like these wartime bungalow style houses, like these little cookie cutter rectangular houses with Canadian flags on them, with big trucks parked out in front of them, and happy and nice as hell. And they're living on these big properties with these little houses, and they couldn't be friggin' happier. And it's the exact opposite. This is where you can like have a nice life and have a decent place to live and like be near nice people. And it's
people
not
people are happy
ruined.
In my neighborhood. People are happy in my neighborhood. No one's moved for a while. So they all paid off their houses 30 years ago. So they're all happy as can be. They got their family coming over all the time. They're doing the thing.
That's a
so
whole other story.
These are the people who are unhappy. They're the ones who've moved. I got a lady who I'm dealing with right now. So she bought she didn't even buy at the peak. You know, she paid like hundreds of thousands of dollars over asking last spring. That's why I'm cautioning people this spring market, man. I'm telling you, last spring, we all kind of were like, oh, the market's back. And then it wasn't. So anyways, this lady bought over asking a couple hundred grand last spring. She went to go sell her home because her realtor said, this is the biggest issue I think that I come across, is the realtor told them, buy first and your house is worth this much money. And then when they actually go to sell their home afterwards, because they say, I paid a lot more, but I'm going to get a lot more. And
I'm okay.
It's hundreds of thousands of dollars lower than what they were expecting. So that's
some
what
even
happened.
Planned for extra, right? When they sold.
Yeah,
it.
Like,
I'm still
going to
get another 50
I'm
going to
do
grand,
the renovation,
right?
I want to do. I've had those too. And so then she didn't sell last year because the advice she got was hang on to the property that you needed to sell in order to qualify for the next mortgage. Get a private mortgage. Not just one private mortgage for $1 million, but two private mortgages.
Perfect.
And next year when you go to sell, somehow that'll all pay for itself. So I walked her through it. You know, I'm now coming into this situation. Obviously, the relationship with the last realtor is no longer there. And I said, all right, let's just do the math here. How much did we pay for the fees? So, okay, the fees for that loan and that loan. Okay, here we go. How much is interest is being calculated based on the like $1.5 million worth of private loans. Like, okay, this number, that number, and like private lender type of interest numbers. So I'm like, all right, so grand total in 1 year, $225,000 in fees and interest. So right. I said, somebody would have had to tell you that the home that you're selling, which is like an average priced home in Toronto, would increase by at least $225,000 in 1 year in order for this to make sense. Because otherwise you just should have just sold for whatever it was worth at the time and moved on and saved yourself that $225,000. And so unfortunately she paid that price. And guess what her home value did over the last year?
Oh, went down.
It's gone down.
Yeah.
A couple of reasons. One is because it's now tenanted, so it doesn't show as well. Two, because the market isn't the same as it was. You know, I mean, we're getting into that market. Maybe the Toronto numbers are going to start coming back now where we're going to see some prices that are going to be really reflective. We went from January to February, we went up 8% average price.
And we got another pause in the action, right?
That's a
pretty interest rate pause.
That's a pretty strong signal, right?
Pause is as good as a cut for this market, though.
I think they're going to keep on pausing until July this year. And then, you know, we could possibly see some rate cuts. But I mean, that's a huge jump, 8% in 1 month. That's even condos went up 2%.
Yeah, because people are crazy again, because it's not going up. And that's as good as anything for a lot of people right now. Stability. But it's a fake trap, because there's no way inflation isn't going to keep going up. Even if they, you know, it's better than expected, or I don't know what the hell, who the hell's expecting what and why we believe any of them. But like, there are so many things that are inflationary right now. I mean, we just saw jobs numbers, TK, right? Mm-hmm. Did you send them to me? So many people send them to me. But the jobs numbers, which are fantastic, they went up. Like, we're adding jobs, baby. But
we're adding jobs, but we're not adding jobs at the same rate as people, right? We got more people coming to the country than jobs that we're adding.
Yeah, so, but hold on a sec. The mix of jobs that were added was that we added, we lost a ton of private sector jobs, okay? We added a ridiculous amount of public sector jobs, right? More government jobs, more government bloat. And I know what you're going to say. Wait a sec before you say it.
I won't say it.
And what we've added is self-employed jobs. So basically,
those aren't jobs.
People are
self-employed jobs.
What do you mean? It's like driving Uber and Lyft and having an Airbnb. That's self-employed.
It's a business.
Those are businesses.
Yeah.
Self-employed is a business. But I mean, you don't have employees. You're just driving an Uber or something, right? Or you started a Shopify store.
I think to qualify as a job, it's like you have to be guaranteed to at least make some money. You know, like when you get a job at Tim Hortons,
from someone
you
else,
stand there. Yeah, you stand there for like 8 hours. Like there's a paycheck at the end of the day.
That's a job.
But there's a chance that you got your Uber license, which probably takes 10 years to even get it. Your car is too old by the time you even receive the authority to do it. Anyways.
But those government jobs are not low paying jobs.
You can just sit in your Uber at like Union Station, you know, watching movies on your phone to tell your wife that you went to work that day and drive zero people. And so you made no money. Like, how is that a job?
Well, you didn't
work,
lose
and
either.
There's an employ. There's a business opportunity to make money. And I'm picking on Uber here, but there's a lot of other self-employed people, like a real estate agent. Is real estate agent having a real estate license? Like, does that count? Are you now employed? I don't think so. You're self-employed. You got to get to work to make some money. Otherwise,
Yeah, you know? Not sometimes in this market. Sometimes you didn't have to do anything, right? And that's why there's so many of you out there.
But
so
they were talking about wages, though. They're talking about wages are now getting a downward pressure on them, and that the job market is becoming a little bit looser. So that
physical
we're going to start
labor.
So that we're going to start to see the wage tightening that we've seen in the past start to dissipate. You know, which is good because that's what we want is when everyone's making more money. You know, like all my six figure friends that I don't know anybody who makes less than six figures according to the people in the comments. Or maybe just according to what I said that one episode. But I definitely think that there's going to be people who are going to be taking their jobs seriously. And so when they're looking at, I was looking at an article about some people who went to the States, lawyers. There's a group of lawyers who went to the States for jobs because they're getting paid more, right? But then you have to look at, you know, the job market over there. Then you got to look at like immigration issues and stuff like that. And so they're looking at, well, how do I come back to Canada? And so a lot of them know that they're going to be making less money, much less money, maybe even half as much money here in Canada. But they look at it and they say to themselves, well, maybe this is the opportunity that I need, or it's the only opportunity that I got, and I'm willing to take less, right? And that's how the job
willing
market
to take
will work.
Less.
Alex,
it's so
welcome
weird.
To the show.
Hey guys, how's it going?
How are you?
It's going good. How are you?
Good
to meet you. Thanks for joining us today. We're just chit-chatting a little bit here about real estate stuff, a bunch of stuff we barely understand. But we figured we'd chat with you today to see what you got going on. Why don't you give yourself a little introduction?
Yeah. So first of all, I'm jealous I'm not wearing my hat. I do have a hat. I just didn't grab it this morning. But my name's Alex Wilson, broker owner of RE/MAX Wealth Builders Real Estate. I operate here in Toronto and Calgary. Been selling real estate for 15 plus years. But on top of that, I'm a real estate investor, have 19 properties worth over $20 million. And what we focus in on is advising people on buying and holding real estate and using real estate as their self-built pension fund.
We
build people's wealth, maximize their wealth and minimize their stress is what we preach.
This is going to be interesting. And in Calgary. In Toronto and Calgary. Love
Toronto and Calgary. So I can give a background on that. So I've been selling real estate in Toronto since 2008, been investing in Toronto real estate since 2012. First condo I bought in Toronto was $267,000. Did it on a deposit of $36,900 and around there. And the cash flowed with 20% down. Closed on that in 2016, refinanced that property, bought more properties, continued to build the portfolio. The issue was that once we started getting around, well, even before that, but let's say around 2019, that word cash flow with 20% down in Toronto, very difficult to do. I would say impossible to do. And that was at rates at that current time, not even talking about rates today. So it's not that Toronto became a bad spot to invest. It just became a different game and a different level investor that could do it. It was wealth-based individuals that could invest in Toronto, or people that were looking to preserve wealth looking to invest in Toronto. The idea of typical real estate fundamentals of put 20% down and generate positive cash flow didn't exist. Now we're just strictly relying on appreciation of the asset, unless you're putting 50% plus down. Again,
those are my favorite performers, the ones that include all of that appreciation as a line item.
Yeah. Well, and Toronto, for people that want to look at just having an asset and having an asset in the city for wealth preservation and looking and owning something, you know, like, let's call it like gold. You know, I would say that Toronto is more like gold in regards to it's a hedge for the rest of your portfolio, that you could have something in there. And I've met people in New York City and Miami, and where they're in markets where you have to put 50% plus to cash flow as well. So it's Toronto's reaching a world-class city level in regards to what you need to do to own real estate here. Now, 2019, that what does that leave the mom and pop investor? That just person that really wants to get into real estate investing, but can't afford to put 50% down. Or if they're just strictly relying on that appreciation, they're like, hey, well, I'm going to put 20% down. I'm okay with that. Well, I don't believe in putting yourself in a situation where you have to sell, because that's when you lose money in real estate. So if you're going to be in a situation where you're taking significant negative cash flow, then you're putting yourself in a position where you have to sell, especially if you're a mom and pop investor that's trying to grow a real estate portfolio that will in essence be your pension fund in the future. So that drove us to Calgary in 2019. And the beautiful thing about Calgary is you talk about appreciation. When we first started promoting investment in Calgary, people were like, well, it's been the appreciation year over year. I'm like, oh, it's negative. It's been going down. I'm like, what? Right. Then why are you investing there? I'm like, that's why I'm investing there, because right. I'm buying somewhere where I'm viewing it's the bottom of the market, because it's just the lack of affordability that existed in Ontario at the time. And again, this was 2019, before the craziness of COVID. So that's what drew us to Calgary in regards to the fundamentals were there for cash flow positive properties, upside on appreciation, has positive population growth, positive economic growth. And then
with 20% down?
With 20%
down. 20%
yeah.
down? Okay.
With 20% down. Yeah. And bonus, they don't have the arcane landlord and tenant laws that we do in Ontario. So there is no rent control. Which again doesn't impact me as much, because a lot of my portfolio was new build. So I most of my portfolio personally isn't subject to rent control. But number two, and I think I really like, and I think it's more important to me, it has fixed term leases, which then allows a clean exit strategy of the asset. And what I mean by that is when I go, if I were to sell a tenanted property here in Toronto, the tenant has all the rights still. And
yeah, they can stay even when the lease is up.
After the lease is up, then you're going month to month. Then it doesn't mean I still can't sell it. I sell it. And then if I sell it to a buyer, and that buyer legally submits an N12 owner intention to owner occupy the unit, and we come up to the date of closing, the tenant doesn't have to leave, because the tenant could file a grievance to the landlord and tenant board, and it could be 12 months till the board sees them for their grievance. But I have a transaction that's closing at that time, but it doesn't matter, because the tenant won't leave. And then that causes an issue. So what does that mean? It doesn't mean that asset isn't sellable, but it means there has to be a discount on the sales price. Whereas when I have a fixed term lease in Alberta, I decide I want to exit the asset and my lease is coming up for renewal. I just say, okay, when we're not renewing the lease, tenant would then move out and I could stage a property, make it look great, and then maximize the return on the investment for the individual. So for me, I love the fact that it's fixed term leases out there, because I actually control the asset. If I want to take the asset back, I can. In Ontario, the only way to take the asset back is if the owner is moving into the property. And then even then, and I've even personally experienced myself in 2016 when we bought a property with the tenant, and the tenant said, no, we're not leaving, and had to bring a paralegal involved. And we did get the property, but it's a hassle and it's stress. You don't have that out in Alberta.
I feel like Alberta's like the Texas of Canada, you know?
Yeah.
Like when things were happening with COVID, you know, they were kind of doing their own thing over there. Their rules are a little bit different. They got a stampede, you know, they wear cowboy hats and boots, and they do things a little bit differently. One of the critiques that people are going to say or they're going to be thinking right now as they're hearing this podcast, because we've had people on the show talk about it, is that there's a lot of people going to Ontario right now from Ontario to Calgary, and they're buying, what do they call that? Fool's gold, you know, like they're buying stuff in Calgary they know nothing about. It's in areas that don't make any sense. They think they can assign it and that they can't do that because there's no assignment market out there. They think that it's going to be renting at like $2,100 a month rent, but it's only going to be $1,600 because the whole building was bought by a bunch of Ontario people and they're all going to be leasing it at the same time. Like, there's a lot of these storylines going on out there. So like, why are you guys different? Why is the Calgary investment opportunities that you guys have different from some of the other ones that people are criticizing?
So I can literally say I am the person that started this whole train. Because if you go back and look at 2019, if anyone was buying investment properties in Calgary in 2019, they weren't. It started with a project.
I'm talking about the last like year or two. Like this.
And I'm still doing it. I'm still doing it right now. So how I'll answer that question, it's no different than if you're buying in the Toronto market, either when you're buying in pre-construction properties. And when I look at the demographics of what is happening in Alberta and Calgary, so when I take a 20-year approach, is everything I look at, so we talk about assignment market, anyone I talk to, I hate assignments. I think they're terrible. I always sell to buy and hold. So that critique is, if you're talking to me and you're like, Alex, I want to buy a property in Calgary and to flip it, then I'm like, I'm probably not the right person to talk to because I'm not going to endorse that. I don't think that's a good investment strategy. Never. Because it just flows into, well, number one, you set yourself up if the market's down to lose money. So never put yourself in a situation where you have to sell. Number two, from a tax perspective, it's a terrible tax vehicle as well, because you're not going to get the capital gain exemption on that. So I take 100% of profit into income. So I can take pennies on the dollar by selling an assignment, but if I hold the property over long term, I can build significant wealth. So I don't believe in assignments. But when I look at the 20-year horizon, and this is Stats Canada data, 20-year horizon on Alberta and Calgary, in 20 years, the population of Alberta is going to grow by 48%. It's the fastest growing population in Canada for a province. Ontario is going to grow by 24% during that same period. So it's going to double the rate of Ontario. There's only three provinces that are going to grow, increase by population, Ontario, Alberta, and British Columbia. Alberta growing the fastest. It's going to have a net swing of 1 million people. So British Columbia currently has more people than Alberta. Alberta will have more people in British Columbia than in 20 years. And Calgary is going to get an outsized portion of that growth, being the population and economic capital of Alberta. They're going to grow by 67.5% at 1 million people over the next 20 years. So all those individuals will require roofs over heads. Now, in regards to on the rental side, when people are buying, because I focus on pre-construction properties that we're in the process of opening a resale division in Calgary, people like buying new properties and they don't want to deal right up front on the mortgage side and on the leasing side. And these properties do come with rental guarantees. Though I do advise people to get opt out of the rental guarantees because I do believe they will do better on the open market. Is there an absorption period? Absolutely, but there's always an absorption period in that first year when if I'm selling a building as 300 units and those 300 units are coming on the market, they don't all come on the market at the same time, but they come on the market over a 3 to 4 month period. It'll take time to rent all those out. But after 1 year, that usually dissipates. And again, I'm seeing the same thing. I see the same thing in Toronto. But the idea is that people like the new construction, they get new product. They don't have to deal with maintenance and renovations on the property. They're not dealing with mortgages and leasing right off the bat. And they do prefer that. And one of the areas that we've seen the best growth in the Northeast. And if you ask anyone in Calgary, they say the Northeast is terrible, but it's seen the most growth over the last few years because that's where the new Canadians have been moving. So it's just like I had the same conversations with people about Hamilton a number of years ago. I was buying in Hamilton before other people were buying in Hamilton. I bought apartment buildings in Hamilton and people said, why are you buying in Hamilton? It's the armpit of Ontario. It's a terrible place. People get murdered there and everything like that. I'm like, yeah.
But Cornwall was the armpit of Ontario. But
everything is the armpit of Ontario.
There's two armpits, right? You got the left and you got the right. And there's one side and Cornwall on the other side here.
So we can go over to Windsor.
Yeah. So hang on a sec. So some people will think that this kind of idea is part of the problem right now, and that like the investors that are front running the rental markets, and I mean, it's necessary to get the buildings built. I get it. I'm a developer. Yep. I know how it works. I, for one, think that the whole system is fucked up and needs to be completely revamped.
I think we can all agree on that. Yes.
Right. So we're perpetuating the problem by bringing like the biggest problem from Toronto over to Calgary. I see that there's definitely an opportunity there, but when, like, at that kind of a pace, when does this opportunity kind of disappear? When all of the idiots from Ontario realize that there's that game over there and that it's not dying, like, how long can it go? Won't prices just, haven't they jumped like crazy out there already in the last few years?
They have, but they've only reached 2014 pricing levels. Calgary went down so far in regards to values. They stayed at the bottom too long. So yes, we've seen an increase in valuations, but we're only reaching 2014 pricing levels for condos today.
So isn't oil like on the downswing? What is Calgary and Alberta gonna do for money soon?
So Calgary is diversified away from oil and gas. So when we get that objection, where people are like, well, what if the boom times end? Because Calgary is typically boom and bust, and oil prices go down. Well, all the employment growth in Calgary has nothing to do with oil and gas. So in previous boom and bust cycles, you had investment in the oil sands, new oil sands being developed. That's not happening this time. No one's investing in the oil sands. You maybe have investments in the efficiency of the oil sands, but everyone that got laid off in that initial crash after 2014, because the price of oil cratered and you lost all these oil energy jobs, none of those people were hired back in this new boom cycle. What it is, it's a diversification. You have significant growth in the tech sector in Calgary because it's affordable. Again, it's affordable for companies to open up offices there. Their commercial office space is a fraction of the cost. Their cost of living, even with the increases we're discussing, is still a fraction of cost for their employees. They have the lowest corporate tax rates in Canada. They have no provincial sales tax. So again, talking about Texas, if we go and we look at what's happening in the States, and you see companies moving away from California, you see companies moving away from New York, Boston, Connecticut, all these high tax areas, and they're moving into Texas, Austin, Houston, moving into Florida because of these low tax environments. We're seeing companies look at the same thing in Canada. And that's what Alberta has to offer, because they are a low tax environment as well. And that's where the population is going, the staff they're going to hire. Is Toronto and Vancouver going to lose their head offices? No, but Calgary becomes a destination point for companies to open up head offices. And that comes to the last point of why I like Calgary. It actually has a global focus. So when I'm looking at my investment markets, I look at how can a global focus come in there? And there's only true four international airports in Canada: Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, and Calgary. And Calgary lags significantly on values compared to Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, even though they have the highest wages and salaries in Canada and the highest millionaires per capita in Canada. That is all in Calgary. So yes, prices have gone up, but they went down so far that there's still significant room to grow. Calgary is still half the price of Toronto. And I'll add this, and you brought up being a developer, with none of the taxes that we deal with here in Ontario. So when I close on my pre-construction properties, which again is the funding model, which requires buildings to be built, which causes these situations, I have my double land transfer tax in Toronto. I have my HST rebate that I have to, now that's a cash flow, I might get that back, but it's still 24K that comes into my pocket. I have all those pass-through development charges by developers, which the municipalities are charging you. So that's another 15 to 20K. I can close on a one bedroom condo here, and it's going to cost me $60,000 up front at the end of the day on closing. In Calgary, that number is zero. So I have none of those extra tax expenses.
Zero? There's no land transfer tax there?
No. No what? Development charges. No development charges.
Oil money, I'm telling you. Everywhere that they got that those like renewable energy type of or energy type of economies, they have these, you know, low tax environments like Dubai and stuff like that. We're not trying to challenge you today, Alex. We're just
I think these are great. Questions. Yeah. I think these are great questions because let's go back to assignments. You said people are telling you can flip an assignment. I love that question because it is against everything on my thesis of investing. And I don't think Calgary's for everyone to invest. And why I like real estate investment. That's purely what it is. And everyone I would say on here likes investing in real estate. And people are going to listen to this, like the idea of owning real estate. Why do I like owning real estate? I like owning a hard asset that I can borrow against, that's under my name, and I can attach an income stream to it, which is the rent. I like growth. So I look at growth opportunities. When I look at Calgary as an alternative to where is that person going to invest that my budget's $500,000? Where in Ontario with $500,000 without going into a second and third tier market can I invest? And if I go into a second and third tier market, that pricing is probably already inflated anyways, because we still haven't come down still from the highs of COVID. So it's just where are those people going to invest? And I like Calgary over Edmonton because I got the upside of the of that head office, that globalization. I think you have a cap in regards to what the upside of Edmonton goes. What'll happen is those people that move, that as Ontario and British Columbia individuals move to Calgary, the people that no longer can afford Calgary, those locals will then move up to Edmonton. And then that'll have a cascading.
You're definitely well researched. I think one of the obstacles that people have with Calgary is the track record, right? I mean, the last 25 years shows that it's been the boom bust market, and that, you know, each and every time that the energy sector has been impacted from some sort of global crisis, the markets in Calgary, I mean, they've got the highest office vacancy rates.
Yep.
You know, absolutely. There was like $4 billion worth of salaries that, you know, walked out of Calgary in 2014 that, you know, never came back. You know, there's a ton of, you know, data that supports that, you know, the way that the world is changing and with clean energy and all that kind of stuff, that, you know, Alberta may not have the economy that it once had, or the potential that we think it should have, you know, with especially with the pipelines and stuff like that not being able to be constructed anytime soon. And so I think that's what a lot of the Calgary agents, I've never even been to Calgary. My sister lives there, but I talked to Calgary agents. And so they tell me this, they're warning us. They're just like, look, why are all these Ontario people buying here? Don't they know X, Y, Z, da, 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 da. And so I think that that's something that I'm sure you inform your clients about to make sure that they understand that this has got to be a long-term investment, which is, to me, the only investment is long-term. Like if you're a short-term real estate person, you know the risks of doing that, whether it's flipping houses or assignments or whatever it is. You got to be, you know, well aware of what those risks are. So
and I just want to add one point to that. And then I just want every webinar I start, I show my portfolio and I show the value in 30 years. Every webinar, I spend 15 minutes showing people the wealth you can create by holding it over a 30-year period, because that's how mortgages are amortized. So I absolutely agree. Hold it over the long term. Sorry about jumping in. I just want to get that point in.
Yeah, no worries. I just keep coming back to the same thought here. And I think I said it last week or the week before. It's like, people with your talents and abilities to kind of group these investors together that are willing to do this should really be directed towards putting that pool of money at a purpose-built rental building that's like managed by a proper manager, and that people are going there to rent and like live, and they can't get kicked out, and it's not front running a home for somebody. Like, I just keep feeling like who was on the other week that also like, oh, the girl that was doing the Burr stuff, like this takes effort and energy and networking and all the things required to get it. Like, do people in condos like having their neighbors be Airbnb or like short-term or renters? Like, I just feel like it's all misguided. And especially when you're thinking 30-year time horizons and investors, it's like, why would somebody want to own just one condo in a building instead of a piece of a building? Like, is that
have you had business partners before?
I've had a few, yeah.
Yeah. Have they all went well?
So far, so good. Maybe back when I was 18, that partnership didn't work out so good.
So when you start adding layers on, again, what I'm talking about is the mom and pop investor. So in order for a mom and pop investor to buy a purpose-built building, let's use Hamilton, for example. So let's go local. I own apartment buildings in Hamilton. Very good friend of mine, Tyler.
We just define what a mom and pop investor is.
Sure. Let's say a plumber and a nurse. Plumber, a trade, and a nurse with a combined household income of $250,000.
But do they have to use
households have that much income?
No,
careful,
that's
else.
Not realistic.
That's,
but do people
you're not
have
allowed to
use,
say that. You have to say everyone makes under $100,000.
Do you have to use your other asset as leverage as part of this to be a mom and pop investor?
No.
Like what defines mom and pop versus just an investor?
It's not a professional investor. It's a retail investor. There's somebody who works a regular job, somebody who shouldn't be investing their money.
Let's say I got $100,000 to invest.
Yeah.
I got $100,000 cash to invest. That's what it is. So 20% down, that's $500,000. I can get $500,000 mortgage. I got $100,000 investment. Let's classify that as a mom and pop investor. 100K. I wouldn't even go if I have a combined household income of $100,000, you probably can't invest because you're not going to be able to get a mortgage.
Yeah.
Now I have $100,000. Where am I going to put that into action? What are my options? So if we're talking about buying a purpose-built building in Hamilton, so I own a 12-unit purpose-built building in Hamilton that's valued at last appraisal that came through. Came in at $4 million. Would it sell for $4 million today? Probably not. So let's say it's worth $3.5 million. So to buy that purpose-built building, I got $100,000. How many people do I have to put together to buy that purpose-built building in Hamilton? Now that building is fully renovated, everything like that, but how many people do I have to put together to buy that? 10 people. That's 10 different business partners with 10 different life objectives, with 10 different life experiences that happen, divorce, death, so many different variables. And where do I get all those 10 people and then put them together? Who's managing those 10 different relationships? It becomes incredibly complicated if I'm putting all those 10 different things together. What I would rather do, this is my experience dealing with people, I want to own my property. I don't want anyone else knowing what I'm doing. It's my money. I don't want to combine my money with other people. I want the only asset in my name and control the asset. That's why they buy on their own. And then if they go, they don't want to go in. And there's a part of the population that will go into REITs and they'll get their payouts and everything like that. These are people that want to control and own the asset
and make more money too. I mean, the returns on these in this scenario here are peanuts compared to the performers I'm sure you've put out in the past, right? Which you know, obviously over a 30-year horizon, what would you tell your clients is going to be their return?
So this is how I work it. Yeah. I say when I get that 30 years, show the portfolio. I'm like fully, and this is how I educate people. In 30 years. And again, this is very simple. We all know that over 30 years, we're going to keep the same property. No, we're going to sell. There's going to be movement. There's going to be different things you can do in your portfolio. But we keep it simple to describe it to people. So over a 30-year period, mortgage will be paid off. And I calculate it at a 3% compound annual growth rate. This is the value of portfolio. If you have $1 million portfolio, this is how much you'll have in 30 years. And then I go, okay, in 30 years, this is how much you have. And then I show what inflation will be over 30 years and how do I calculate inflation over 30 years. I just look at what happened the last 30 years, apply that rate, what's the average over the last 30 years. And then I apply a 5% rate of return. And like, this is in 30 years, this is what you can pay yourself as an annual income. That's your pension fund at a 5% conservative annual rate of return on that. So that's how I look at it. So I don't look at what's my rate of return on my initial investment. I show them 3% compound annual growth, portfolios paid off. This is what you can pay yourself in 30 years if you're doing that. Again, as simple as possible. We all know, again, you will be doing things throughout that 30-year period. You're probably not going to hold the same condo for 30 years because you'll start reaching depreciating rate of returns. Are maintenance fees increasing a building? Do I need to sell the asset? Various things. But you keep it really simple and you just look at that and you've controlled the asset over that entire period. And what I find too is people actually want input on who's living in the asset as well. So, you know, that's where they just like having control and ownership. And when I look at my target market demographic in our description, we like educated people that want to own real estate and like control. That's literally what it is in there. The people that don't care about control and my family, my mother is conservative. She knows the value of real estate, but she doesn't own any real estate. She would be more comfortable earning points on her money. Like that's more comfortable for her. She doesn't need that control. She wants more safety and security of someone else managing it. She doesn't want to get into the dealing with tenants and everything like that. There's still a huge avenue for that. And in the stock market, I'm way too invested in real estate in regards to my real estate investments are assets here. And then in the stock market, I also own REITs. So I should probably do some diversification, but it's what
I'll
I
give
know.
I'll give you some more content for today's episode here. And again, I'm not targeting you. I'm just bringing up all the
scenarios.
I want to hear your answers. So yeah. I got a lady right now who mm-hmm. I've been dealing with for a little while, probably like at least a year. She mm-hmm. had bought, sad story, you know, she sold her dad's house, used mm-hmm. that money to invest in real estate, bought two mm-hmm. brand new townhouses from a builder and mm-hmm. then bought an assignment. Okay. Mm-hmm. She mm-hmm. bought the assignment. She overpaid. So she mm-hmm. closed on it. Interest rates went up. I think mm-hmm. she's drowning, you know, a few thousand bucks a month over there. Mm-hmm. The assignments mm-hmm. that she had bought or the new construction townhomes that she bought, her dad actually mm-hmm. passed away before they were built. And so mm-hmm. the builder gave her back one of the deposits, mm-hmm. hoping that she would then close on the other one. Mm-hmm. She couldn't close. Couldn't mm-hmm. get the money. The builder basically said, look, your deposit from the first one, plus the losses, the value and everything like that, she had to cut a check to the builder for $200,000 to back out mm-hmm. the contract. She can't mm-hmm. close. Mm-hmm. And then she's got this other assignment that she bought in a town that may never, ever go up and that it mm-hmm. just may never, mm-hmm. she may never win there, mm-hmm. you know? So like mm-hmm. these type of scenarios are happening now more than ever. So in the last year or two, these are the real scenarios that are happening, right? Freehold mm-hmm. markets, mm-hmm. the condo market in Toronto, I'm sure this is going to happen more and more as people come to close okay. and those projected. So when we talk about 3%, you know, increase every year, what are the developers are doing? Mm-hmm. What do the developers project in their performance? 5-6%, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. What happens?
Put anything
somebody...
in there? If you put you, this is
but this
the
is what they're selling
with...
you.
No. I say 3% compounded annual growth over 30 years.
I know. It's gonna be that what I'm just trying to say though is that when people buy pre-construction. And, mm-hmm. you know, what happens if they can't close because the appraiser doesn't come in? What happens if they don't have the money to be able to shortfall the...
That never happens, though.
The
so
cash flow, the negative cash flow. But it's true. right?
Yeah, it happens.
These are all the scenarios that happen, right?
Yeah.
And so, like,
yeah.
How do you talk to people about that? How do you give people advice on those type of scenarios?
So, we lead by education through our how we do our business, because I want people to know the risks when they're doing their investing, so that we don't have any control of when there's ups and downs in the market. We have no crystal ball, so that they're prepared for when those situations happen, because I know that that'll all smooth out over the long run. That's why I do 30-year projections. So they
Which
just
I agree
to
with.
Be,
I think 30 yeah. years in real estate. I don't care
Everything
what price
works
you pay
in
today.
30 years.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I don't care what price you pay today. In 30 years from now, you'll be happy.
So the answer is that when that situation comes up, they're prepared to deal with the situation. Now, I where you give that example right there, I see what the issue is right there. She bought three. She should have probably bought one. She bought one. She'd be fine.
She should have bought none.
Probably an idiot is the problem.
It's
right?
not that, Daryl. It's not that.
No, no.
But if she would have bought one instead of three, then she would have been okay.
And less
right?
trouble,
and then,
yeah.
But it's like, you know, if we buy a certain stock or if we bought into, I'll tell you the story when I bought into Bitcoin. I bought into Bitcoin. By the way, I'm not in Bitcoin anymore, but I bought into Bitcoin.
2009.
When No.
No way. Two years ago, like us.
I bought it in when, so this was my mindset. When the Canadians, so I didn't buy physical Bitcoin. I bought a Canadian EFT that was, that they bought Bitcoin when it became legal in Canada. And I'm like, this is it's legitimizing now. I figure it'll take off. So it was like around, I bought it around 65,000 or maybe it was 62 or something. It was a high number. And then it legitimized in Canada, then immediately went down, went into the 30s. I'm like, this is terrible. I don't like this roller coaster ride. Then it eventually went back up. So I did end up making some money. It went like, I don't know, it was like 62. Maybe I sold at 65. And then I was out. And now that we see it's in America, they've legitimized it in regards to EFTs. So you can buy EFTs there. And now they're reaching record levels, 69, 70, that kind of stuff. But I'm not comfortable buying into that whole market and everything like that. So it just, as long as people are educated, you're going to ups and downs and everything, but as long as you're educated and ready to ride out the wave on something, and it may never come back. Well, I've bought stock that has not ever come back in regards to its valuations again. That's why I like real estate, because I attach an income stream to it. And that's also why
the riding
like
the wave thing that makes the difference.
You gotta be handle. And if you overextended and bought three properties, then you put yourself in a situation. But you bought one and we're at the bottom.
Big wave.
Yeah.
And that's it. Even in developers right now, like we got so many companies under receivership right now. There's a new office tower that's under receivership there near Scarborough Town Center. We've got so many different developers who are going to be coming under receivership. The guy we were talking to last week said one of his lenders said there's like 250 properties right now going through the process around Ontario that are all at that level where there's some sort of loan that's being recalled. And it's really just a game. A real estate game is really just like hang on to the property. That's it. If you can hang on to that property and you will become wealthy with real estate. It's really not that complicated. It's just very difficult to hang on
sometimes
to that
hanging
property.
On gets a little tricky.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have we all been through stressful situations holding on to real estate?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah. And uncomfortable situations.
Yeah.
We have. And I could say I looked at my portfolio in 2023 and I'm like, this looks terrible.
What's the highest loan to value you've ever had on all your portfolio where you were like, holy smokes, what's going on right now?
Oh, like I was probably negative loan to value when I was in my early 30s and didn't have any family. But that's when I was buying apartment buildings and doing the Burr method. That to me, that's the scariest stuff. I don't do that anymore. In one year, I bought three with partners. I bought three buildings in Hamilton and did the Burr method with those. When you get into private money and everything like that, so I was negative.
You're borrowing the renovation money. Everything's all just,
exactly.
Yeah.
And literally months, like I feel like I was breaking the piggy bank just to cover my expenses. You get the cash calls, you get the.
But if you time that right, man, if you time that thing right,
gotta finish that reno. Well, look at all these guys.
It all ended up working out, but it was incredibly stressful. But this was the thing. And again, this was the time then, but when I looked at it, because that was that around 2016? 2015? Anyway, what it was, in that one year, the amount of money I made on the BRRRs and the amount of my appreciation I made on my condo investments were the exact same. And my condo investments were a lot less stressed than dealing with the BRRRs. Now, again, it was a different time then. There was the room for appreciation. I'm not saying run out to buy pre-construction condos. The BRRRs.
Two different markets.
And you can make an incredible amount of money in doing the BRRRs. My what I tell people, that's active investing. And here's your stress points. Can you make a lot of money on it? Absolutely. Just be prepared for all the different things you're going to deal with in regards to dealing with contractors disappearing, contractors stealing from you, the city stopping your building because they don't like the permit you have, unexpected cash calls. Dealing with banks, refinancing your private money lenders. Again, I was able to do that in my early 30s when I had no kids and I wasn't married. I survived. In my 40s, I absolutely couldn't do it right now. Like that, the stress level that would be, I'd be involved with, I wouldn't be able to deal with it. It would just take away. I don't want to deal with it. What I tell with people, there's always ways to make money in real estate, every kind. Like I'm currently in one of my investments. I'm not involved in it. I'm one of the people I invested in a fund and they're doing purpose-built self-storage. I don't know how to build self-storage. But I like the business case on it, and someone else is building the self-storage, and I gave.
How'd you get connected with those guys?
It's a friend of mine. So I own other real estate assets with him. Malium Investments, they did a lot in Hamilton. So they were in Hamilton early, and they did the Burr method in Hamilton. And now they're moving on to doing a purpose-built self-storage because the returns they were getting on the Burr method in Hamilton, those are really difficult to come by now. So now they're moving into a different avenue to make
it's hard to buy at the right price now. Storage
is a great, great business if you can hit the right place, because you get such a crazy return per square foot, and there's no cost to run them at all. There's like one guy at a time and a bunch of cameras and lights they turn on their own. Like once
and no landlord tenant board.
No landlord, tenant board, also,
no cap on the increases,
and you can buy like crap land too, like, you know, land that you can't do much else with.
It needs to be near like, something right off the
401 or something. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to build a building there because the highway's there, but the highway's a great asset now because you're advertising your storage.
Right? People are living in them now, though. Like, I've seen videos on TikTok with people living in them saying this is cheaper than living anywhere else.
Yeah, 60 degrees, but you know, whatever.
They got electric. Steady. They paid $15 a month for electric, and they can plug heaters in those bad boys. You put a couple of blankets on the walls, and they're insulated units now.
Yeah.
And if you look at storage too, so we talk about things over 20, 30 years. It's all it is land holding, because in 20, 30 years, Daryl will come knocking your door going, hey, I can flip your property to developer. Or let's work together, rezone this, and then we'll flip it to developer, because that's what it is.
Good point.
No one's going to stop you from knocking down a public storage building.
Even better,
the cost to build those walls is not as great as it would be building like a 10-story office building and having to knock that down.
No, it's tin. But I have friends that are developers that own a company doing the storage as well, and it's exactly that. It's a land bank with a twist. With a really profitable twist. And then later, whenever the time is right, they're going to redevelop it themselves and build it themselves. And like the amount of money made on that play is insane, because it's like beside a railroad track in an industrial area that now there's townhouses across the street. Right?
Yep.
So one day that thing is just like, I can't even imagine what percentage the return on investment would be.
My thing, Alex, is most people that I deal with. And I guess because I'm on the resale side, so I deal with the people who are coming to me and then they're telling me their woes. And I'm like, that was a big mistake. You screwed up. You lost a lot of money. Now we got to sell it. And, you know, I'm getting a lot of those stories. Okay. I get a lot of those.
You're going to get more. You're going to get a ton of those in 2020.
So I like to tell people when they think about investing is to consider doing exactly what you did with your friend with the storage. Find a professional investor. Get in the fund. Get into, you know, if you're an accredited investor, you can get into some better deals. If not, you might have to find the smaller deals with the smaller guys. But find someone you trust who knows what they're doing, who's really well researched, you know, to be able to.
So my only issue with that, and I did it, and you're right. You need to have the right fund partner. So
no control.
I've only done it once. Very, very good friend of mine, own real estate with him, trust him thoroughly, has track record, partnered with good people. The only issue with funds is if you're not with that right person, then you lose everything. And that's what I tell people. You're investing in a fund, that money you put in,
you
just have to be okay about losing all of that.
Yeah, look at the most recent examples where they got 800 doors and 200 are vacant. So I agree.
Well, you give an example, or just the Fortress investment.
Yeah, Fortress. But even now, KingSett, who gets other people's money into a fund and lends it out to developers, is on every one of these big bankruptcy cases right now. They've lent money somewhere in the deal and are now at the courts knocking doors saying, we want our money back. And those guys are geniuses. Right. Mm-hmm. So you could even invest with a genius. It's the
maybe that's too big, though. I think that's too big. You get your buddy, you say, okay, my buddies, like your example, Alex, is your storyline of your investment history is the what I'm talking about is, you know, you found the right people at a young age, guys who are maybe more active than you because you were maybe selling real estate or, you know, whatever it is, you find guys who are willing to do the work, who are maybe contractors, who are maybe professional real estate investors, but they're going to be doing the brunt of it. Give up the share that you think you value that much, but in the end, it's going to be a much better investment where somebody's, you know, who you trust is working on it really much. It's not for everybody. I'm just saying there's a bunch of people who make really poor decisions they need to have a better half helping them make those decisions so that they can actually make money in real estate. Otherwise, you might as well just go and put it in the stock market or, you know, something more secure and never look at it again. Right?
It should be contained to buildings and to like smaller just purpose built buildings. They shouldn't be buying homes and condos where people can afford to buy for themselves. That's what I think. And it's a great way to make money right now.
Like, I think the people who don't want to have any headaches and it's just new and they buy a piece of paper.
Let's go to the fundamental problem. And so Daryl brought it up and he works with builders. So this is the exact fundamental problem in regards to the financing model for developers relies on that small investor because they can't get their funding for construction unless 80% of the building is pre-sold. Now, the issue is that no end user, so the idea of someone buying a home for them to live in, no end
user is
going to wait 7 years to live in that home.
Sure. The whole system is stupid.
So it's completely different in the States. You don't have that in the States.
In the States, so they're protecting, we're the reason we don't have it like in the States is because we're protecting the banks.
Yeah.
You know, because the banks don't want to put out $100 million and find out that nothing sold afterwards.
Yeah.
The risk is on
that. That's what
it
is. Yeah. The small time investors. So if we stopped selling condos to investors, there would be zero condos being built. And developers don't want to build purpose built right now. It doesn't make financial sense for them.
There's a lot of people looking. There's a lot of people talking.
There's tax changes that are coming that are going to make sense, and they're going to make them very lucrative.
A builder will build to what makes them the most money. So there has to be policy changes or a different way to do business, and the builders will build the one that makes them the more money. That's ultimately what it is. So but we can all definitely agree on that in regards to there's a housing shortage.
It's not even true, though, because you can't build the building that makes you the most money because they make you build bigger units that are really hard to sell and you sell them for less per square foot. They pack you with 20% units that are really difficult to sell. And that's why the cheaper ones are so expensive because they got to bring up the profit so that everybody invests in the deal. Yeah. This system is so fucked from every level. It's so ridiculous. And there's so many smart, creative people that if you just change the way things work, they'll direct their attention towards things that are better for the population instead of crazy things. And it's not that they're crazy. They're just like misguided away from what's best for everyone and what's good for a few people. And not that I think there's anything wrong with that. I like profits. I like money. But it's so simple and you solve so many problems by diverting this away from certain things and towards other things. But it's like,
the returns
the
aren't
only
there.
People trying to make a difference are the three of us right now, because the people that are supposed to, they're busy coming up with schemes and scams and, you know, other ways to rip us all off and add to the tax base and steal from it. It seems.
Did you see how they canceled the, I don't even know what it was called, but remember how the government would take a percentage of ownership?
The first time buyer thing. Yeah. I didn't know a single person who ever used that.
Because there was only 383 of them.
Yeah. You know, so that doesn't make any sense at all.
But there's one builder that I do like what they were doing. What are they called now? They built the Heitzman building. They have one in Humber right now. Options for homes. I thought I like
options for homes. That's an interesting
it's
way
all in the
of
name,
doing
you know?
business.
It's all in the name.
But
explain that.
are you familiar? Are you familiar with Nadero?
No.
Oh
No.
yeah. This
Yeah.
is ingenious level. This
Explain
is
it.
serious stuff.
It well, it's basically it was it's what the federal government tried to do. They're loaning out the down payment for the property. So they built it's a no frills building. So there's no frills building. What they're building, very simple finishes. We're talking about laminate countertops, white appliances, that kind of stuff. Very 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 no frills what they build, and they give down payment support. But they get a piece of the equity. This is
Is this
when the
effective, or
property sold.
did they sell? Like, did they? What happened here? Is this just
Yeah,
like an
they sell.
idea? What
No,
happened?
no, 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 no.
They
They're
have a
an established
building.
builder. It's been around for a very
Oh,
long
yeah.
time.
They have
Yeah.
one at Dawes Road and Bloor or Danforth. They have one near
So it
Weston
paid
and
off then if they've been doing it for a
yeah.
while because now they own a
They've been
stake in
doing it
that
for a
property
while.
that's worth
Yeah.
a lot more than when they built it.
Yeah. So the idea is, let's say you're I'll just use an example. You're a teacher. Again, Toronto's very expensive. You're able to get in at a lower price point or lower down payment because it's really hard to get that down payment. But you're giving up part of the upside on that, but you're able to own your own property and you own your own home. So when you go to sell it, you're giving up 25, 50% of the equity. I don't know what I'd have to look at the numbers. So none of these numbers quoted, but you just give up part of the equity on that sale, but you would never have owned any real estate otherwise, because you would never would have been able to get into the down payment.
And now
So
you
I
own some real estate.
yeah. So you get to participate in the upside of it, which is, better than not. Right.
If
So
there's an
I agree
upside.
in theory the program makes sense, but it never worked out because in the areas that need it the most, there was a limitation on how much income you could have and your ratio of income to total mortgage amount. So it just the math just, just didn't really make sense for people to do it. And the areas that were qualifying or easier to qualify, people were like, well, why would I want to give the government a part of my house? Why would I do that? I'll
Yeah.
just put
Oh, yeah. They
5% down and
yeah.
get the
The
mortgage
federal
and the
government. So
mortgage insurance payment.
I would say the private market, it worked. So it works
Yeah.
for them. The options for home, it's been successful.
Yeah.
But yeah, the numbers didn't work on the
Yeah.
federal program.
For
There's too
options for
many
homes, maybe
caps and limits and everything.
I had a
I think there's
different way
some
of structuring it.
nuances. Yeah, to nuance, there's nuances to options for homes deal that
Yeah.
when you dig a little deeper are probably not quite in the best
We've
interest
had people
of
on the
the
show. We've had quite a few guests that have all these. I can't even remember some of the name of the companies now where they've got
key. There
Key
was
is
one
one.
key.
Who
I don't
else do
know.
we
People are
have?
selling Bitcoin
We've had
mortgages. Everything's
yeah.
fucking
Well, that's when
Bitcoin.
you get
Getting
into
into Alex.
fractional ownership and everything like
Yeah, yeah,
that.
yeah, yeah. That kind
Fractional
of stuff.
ownership.
And
I kind
so
of
far
like
none of
that
them.
idea.
So far none of them are very successful in my mind as far as like taking out market share. But somebody signed up for their program. Somebody's got a
Somebody
mortgage with
did.
them. Somebody's
Yeah.
happy. The Bitcoin guy, Alex, when he came on, this was like
We gotta check in with
2021
him.
or something like that. That
Yeah.
guy's probably
Bitcoin
at the bottom of the
mortgages.
lake somewhere. But it was like you would give
What
up your.
was well that wasn't
You could leverage your Bitcoin.
It wasn't Darren Shrozby, is it? Was it? Okay, so
It could
Darren
be.
Shrozby,
I don't think so.
he's in insurance, but
Yeah.
he was the first person to sell his property
No, no,
and
no.
only wanted to
No, that guy
sell
in
it to
California?
CompNet.
Yeah.
This was a company that was offering people, give me your Bitcoin as collateral. I'll give you a mortgage that was worth probably
Give you
about
some.
half of what the Bitcoin was worth. Right, we have to maintain a certain loan to value here, and then I'll give you a real mortgage so that you can go and buy a property with your Bitcoin without having to sell it. But the
Clearly, a
Bitcoin's at like
government
80 grand,
official was part
and
of
then a
that
year ago, and then a year
planning.
later, it was at like 20.
Yeah.
So we're not sure what happened to that guy. We never heard
Yeah.
from him again. But
We
there's lots
never
of things
heard
like
from him
that are out there.
again.
So we're at the end of the show, Alex. We just want to,
Yeah.
thank you very much. I mean, a little
Hey,
bit
no
of a
problem.
shameless
Appreciate you
plug.
guys
Where
having on.
people can find you? How do they get a hold of you? Lots of people are not just watching, but they're also listening. So just give people
Yeah, of course. You can always find us on our website, remaxwealth.com. For Calgary, we have ybycalgary.com, or you can follow me on Instagram at wealthbuildersre, at wealthbuildersre. Happy to talk with anyone, discuss, and always, and guys, appreciate you guys having me on. Love this debate and discussion. I'll just leave it at. I think we all think real estate's a great investment. You should be investing in real estate. How you invest in real estate, that's up to you, and talk to the experts in those various fields to learn how to invest in real estate. Would that
Awesome.
be a good way to think about real estate?
Perfect. We appreciate your
Perfect.
time, Alex.
Okay,
Thank
awesome.
you so
Appreciate it, guys.
much.
Thanks so
Great to
much.
meet you. Thanks for your
Okay,
time.
we'll chat soon. See you
Take
guys.
care.
Bye.
Okay,
Bye-bye.
bye. TK?
Hey.
Hello. Another show. Did we learn anything today, TK?
No.